In today's Purposeful Conversation, we're talking with Bradley Fagan about ABLE accounts and taxes and what families need to know. Mr. Fagan has been practicing law for over 35 years. He has extensive experience in all aspects of elder law, estate planning, estate and probate litigation, special needs and guardianship, and conservatorships, Medicaid probate administration, and tax matters. He practices law in Colorado, Wyoming, and Kansas. Please help me welcome Mr. Fagan, and thank you so much for speaking with us today on ABLE accounts and taxes. How can ABLE accounts help families with special needs?
So why ABLE account is important, it's the first time where families that are receiving Medicaid and SSI benefits can actually have a savings account that don't disqualify them for those types of benefits. And ABLE accounts are a little bit different, that they are actually found under the Internal Revenue Code. They're a Internal Revenue Code provision, and they act as kind of a combination between an IRA account and a 529 college plan. So it is a little bit of a confusing type of provision, but it is so important that it gives people that have a disability that they can have their own savings account, they can contribute to it and manage it themselves if they have the ability to do so. And it also allows families to make contributions to these accounts and so these individuals can have a lot more freedom about how they use the money and what they do with the money. Now, there's, of course, a lot of restrictions with these accounts. Not everybody with a disability or on benefits who can set them up. They're limited to an individual has to have a disability determined prior to age 26. So either they're receiving SSI or SSDI benefits, or if they're not receiving those benefits, they have to have a physician state, provide a statement that they do meet the definition of being disabled under the Social Security rules, which basically means that they're unable to engage in substantial gainful employment with a condition that is expected to last more than 1 year. So that's why these accounts are so important for families to know and understand. And it was truly the first time since these SSI Medicaid programs were enacted that allows families or individuals to have a savings account.
Okay. And the money, is there restrictions on what the money can be used for?
Well, there are restrictions on there. There's restrictions on how much it can be you can contribute to the account. The first limitation is that it is tied to what we call the annual gift tax exclusion. And that means that the total contributions that can be made to the account for 1 year is limited to $15,000. And that's from every source. And so it could be from the individual's own money. It can be from family members contributing the money. But the total amount of contributions that can be done for the account is $15,000. Now, that contribution into the account is not tax deductible for that, but it is treated as what we call a gift of a present interest. So it doesn't have any gift tax effects whatsoever. And also, too, in the new tax act that was just enacted in 2018, they are also going to allow additional contributions above the $15,000 by the individual that has a disability. So that will mean that they can make some additional contributions for up to $12,060. That's tied to the basic poverty rate. They will also receive a non-refundable savers tax credit against their income, and that's limited to a maximum amount of $1,000 for that credit there. So there are some additional amounts. There's also legislation that's proposed to up that amount above the $15,000 amount. but it is right now it's 15,000 plus the additional amounts the individual with a disability can do if they are working part-time.
Okay, well, that was a question I was going to ask, but you just explained it there. So they can contribute, parents or whoever can contribute up to $15,000 into the account. And then if the individual with disabilities is working, they can put up to $12,600. Is that what you said?
Right. Okay. It's equal to the amount of the smaller of their total compensation or $12,060. So the smaller of those two numbers is what they can contribute. And then in addition, they would get that tax saving credit, but that's a credit that they would receive when they file their individual tax return.
Gotcha. So how does it work with the 529 funds and the rollover with ABLE accounts?
Well, that's a very good question, because a lot of parents or grandparents, they want to create a college fund for their children, and so they contribute to these 529 plans. And then what happens that if a child gets injured later on, or their disability isn't determined till later on, and they've got this money in this 529 college plan, again, this is a change that happened in the new tax act. It wasn't in the original bill. That allows individuals to roll over a 529 plan into an ABLE account. Now, ABLE accounts are 529 plans are 529 because that's the Internal Revenue Code provision for college plans. 529A is the ABLE account provisions under the Internal Revenue Code. Now, you are limited on how much you can roll over per year. And again, that limitation is $15,000. So you've got total contributions amount limited to $15,000 per year, and that would also include the amount that you're rolling over from the 529 plan. But if you did have an existing 529 plan, you could roll over, $15,000 per year until you've got it all transferred to the ABLE.
Okay, very interesting. Okay. And so I think you already explained about the can you roll over an ABLE account to something else?
There's very limitations about this. And you can only roll over an ABLE account from an individual with a disability. There's very strict limitation on who you can roll it over to. And it can only be rolled over to a sibling or step-sibling that also meets the definition of being disabled under the Social Security Administration rules. But that's the only individuals that you can roll over an ABLE account to.
I see. So are there any traps or things that families need to know about when using ABLE accounts?
Oh, there's a lot of traps and things. And unfortunately, like most public benefit rules, they impose a lot of, complicated restrictions on these accounts. The basic things that you have to understand is that once the money's contributed into the ABLE account, the money is supposed to be used for what we call qualified disability expenses. That's what the rule is. They're saying that once the money's in there, the money can only be used for qualified disability expenses. They have a kind of a list of them, what they would consider. Is that they want it to be a very broad list. It can be used for education, housing, transportation, employment, training and support, assistive technology and personal support services, health, prevention and wellness, financial management and administrative services, legal fees, expenses for oversight and monitoring, funeral and burial expenses, and other expenses which are approved by the Secretary of Social Security Administration and IRS regulations. So anything related to the disability is any type of distribution out of the ABLE account. If it's related to this qualified disability expense, the distribution is tax-free. If it's a distribution out that is not a qualified disability expense, that can be a taxable distribution to the beneficiary. And there can be a 10% penalty on top of that that income tax that would be owed on that distribution. Now, the income tax will be pretty limited because it's the taxable would be only from the growth of that account that would occur. So it's a limited amount of income tax, but there would be a 10% penalty about that. There also is, you know, we have to be careful about, so how the individual is using that money is important, because some individuals that they'll be given they're given a debit card so they can use that account. And so some individuals could be very easily exploited or taken advantage of, somebody talking into them to withdraw money out of that account and to make sure and so they're taken advantage of or by other people that know that they have access to those funds. Now, there's also total contribution limits, where if the account goes above $100,000, then an individual's SSI benefits are suspended. That doesn't mean they lost their eligibility, but once the account goes above $100,000, then SSI limits are suspended. Now, if the account then goes up above, each state has a total 529 total contribution limitation. And in the state of Colorado, that's $400,000. Every state's number is a little bit different, but it's around that number, about that. So if an ABLE account goes above 400,000, then they would lose their Medicaid and SSI benefits. But if you think about it and do the math, when it's limited to $15,000 per year, it'll take a long time for somebody to get up above those limits, those total dollar amounts. But the most important things that people have to understand is that when that beneficiary passes away, there is a payback provision in those accounts, meaning that the state will get paid back for any Medicaid services that the state provided. You don't pay back the Social Security Administration for SSI benefits. You don't pay back, for SSDI benefits or disabled adult child benefits. It's just medical assistance that Medicaid paid for after the creation of the account. So that's why we tell parents that it's another tool in the toolbox to use for their family members with a special need. You know, we should have they still should have the their estate planning done, their trust created after they pass away for their children. Just as that's another tool we can use. So what we do is we make sure that in the parent's power of attorney documents or in their revocable living trust documents, it allows the agent under the power of attorney, or it allows the trustee of their trust to make contributions to those ABLE accounts. And it's also important too that the individual with special needs, that they have a power of attorney if they have capacity that would allow them to turn over management of this ABLE account to somebody to manage and to make sure that the money's being used correctly and nobody's exploiting them and things like that. So I think that these accounts are they're very, very popular. It's a very popular item with politicians about keeping these accounts. They're talking about adding and expanding them. You know, whoever knows what Congress does, but I think people should feel safe and secure that once these accounts are established, they may limit contributions, but to say, to go back and say, oh, well, retroactively, we're going to get rid of them, I would say that that's very unlikely, but, you know, I don't have that crystal ball, but I would say that that would be a very unpopular thing to do for all of these families with special needs family members. And again, it's a great account. It's another tool to use, but it's a great account to allow a lot of individuals the freedom to have some of their own money, to manage their own money, to make contributions to their account, and to see it grow and use it for things they want. And again, that's why these ABLE accounts are a great addition to this area of the law But as I said, it's just one tool, and people shouldn't be making, you know, building these things up into large amounts, because if that beneficiary, when that beneficiary does pay it back, all of that money's gone and goes back to the state. And that can be a tremendous loss of wealth that they don't need to do if they would have set it up properly in another type of trust.
I see. Okay, so just I got that, but I want to just make sure I'm clear. The very last part that you said is if we were to set this up and do it with our children, doing the limits that were allowed, the $15,000, and something happens, the child deceases or whatever, and the money does go back to the state. I thought that I understood maybe that you were saying that it goes back to Medicaid expenses only, but is it also get paid back?
Yes, it goes back to pay, reimburse the state for Medicaid expenses paid on behalf of that individual. So it's like a payback claim. So the state gets reimbursed out of that money. The only exception is if you have another disabled sibling or half sibling, where you could roll that money over to them. That's the only exception to the payback. You do not pay back SSI benefits. So the monthly check, you do not pay that back. It's just Medicaid assistance, you know, medical expenses that Medicaid paid, Medicaid services that were provided to that child. Those are what are reimbursed. And it's only for Medicaid services that were paid out after the creation of the 529.
I see. Okay. I think that's important, because I don't think parents necessarily understand that. So I think that's a good point.
And I think it's just a lot of, they're not told that part about it, you know, about the payback provision. That's why it's another tool. It's not the only tool you should be using. But again, it is just one of the tools. It's a great tool to use, you know, when we have trust set up for individuals with that are on benefits. It's a great tool to add and utilize, because it allows us to pay certain expenses for that beneficiary that would otherwise create us problems out of a trust. So, but again, those rules are very complicated, and parents should be consulting with an attorney to talk to them about these rules and their overall plan for their child or family.
And that was going to be my next question, is who should families consult? They should go to a special needs attorney,
so they can understand these rules, understand how they fit into the planning process, understand what steps they should take to make sure that the money's being monitored, that they're monitoring the account. And again, there's a lot of traps there, a lot of very detailed rules, but overall, you know, everybody in the special needs community was cheering when this act was finally put into place, and as I said, I just think it's a great thing where, you know, finally they can have a little savings account above $2,000. It was ridiculous to limit people to that low number and to worry about what I'm going to do if I, you know, get another $500 check.
Right. No. Well, I can't thank you enough. I think you explained it very well. I understand it much better than I did, because I had heard through other families, like, you know, some things that you clarified regarding how the money, you know, can be transferred or rolled over. So I appreciate that. So overall, you would say it's another tool in their toolbox. Make sure you're consulting with a professional lawyer to go over everything to make sure that it's going to benefit your child the way it needs to.
You need to, you know, we put, you know, these 529 ABLE provisions in everybody's, you know, power of attorney document, trust document. If we're creating a power of attorney document for the individual with disability who has capacity, we want the agent under that power of attorney to have the authority to make contributions to those ABLE accounts. So they need that planning to make sure this all can work. And then understand, all right, here's what we should be doing. Here's other ways that we would work around these rules. But again, people are not being told about the payback provision with these accounts. And that's important to know.
Right, it is. All right, well, I can't thank you enough for taking your time to share with our audience and educate them on this. So thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll take care. I hope that this has helped you to understand ABLE accounts a bit more and to address some of your concerns and to become aware about some of the traps that you need to know about. I'm Shantae, and you've been listening to Parenting Special Needs Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you haven't done so yet, please go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. Then rate and review this podcast. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you soon.